The South Akron Youth Mentorship is exactly what the name implies. These folks mentor the youth of Akron, Ohio. If you would like to volunteer or perhaps help with a charitable donation, please visit saymentor.org and find out how you can help out today. That's saymentor.org.
Welcome to the Phil Nasons Show.
Welcome to the Phil Nasons Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll be here for the entire hour, and we'll talk EuroLeague basketball. We'll take a look at the Western Conference and Eastern Conference All-Stars and Snubs. I'm going to replay a segment I did with Rush Olson about Ernie Banks. But up first, the Utah Jazz have won two of the last three. I really thought they'd win last night, but they didn't. But that's neither here nor there. Joining me to talk all about the Utah Jazz, please welcome from slcdunk.com and a big reason why this podcast was nominated for Podcast of the Year. Please welcome Amar to the show. Amar, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's great to be back on. I can't wait to dive into this because, you know, there's just so much to talk about with the team that's, you know, heading for the lottery again.
Headed for the lottery. That's kind of a bummer, but are there any injuries that we should know about? Any special news we should know about?
Well, yeah, definitely. Like, there are things happening. Unfortunately, the Jazz lost Alec Burks for the season a long time ago. And, like, he didn't even hit 1,000 minutes this year, which really slows his development down. And Rodney Hood is in and out of the lineup with his plantar fasciitis and his ankle problems and his heel problems. So what Utah is doing right now is that they're gone fishing, like deep sea fishing, you know, almost, you know, bottom feeding at this stage, looking at the D-League for anybody who can possibly help at guard. And the big news is that Elijah Millsap, Paul Millsap's younger brother, got signed on for the rest of the season and many more, while Elliot Williams, who was also on that 10-day contract carousel, got his walking papers and they'll, you know, they wish him the best, but he's not coming back, which is kind of funny because Williams is a better shooter, but Millsap is a better defender.
And I like Elijah. He's a big fan favorite too, right? Because he's Paul Millsap's little brother.
Yeah, definitely. And he does a lot of the things that nobody else on the team currently was doing. You know, he's a very handsy defender and so forth. But I do want to warn the fans that just because the Utah Jazz have gone out and signed him to a three-year deal does not necessarily mean that he's going to be here for 3 years. And it doesn't mean that, you know, he has that security. It just means that, number one, Utah has learned from their previous mistakes. And number two, there's plenty of evidence to show that they're willing to sign a guy for money and then, you know, cut him later. What happened a few years ago was there was this, you know, undrafted rookie by the name of Wesley Matthews. And they just signed him to, you know, the least amount of money possible and on a one-year deal. And he ended up becoming a starter on that team. The Utah Jazz made a few trades to free up some more playing time for him. Jerry Sloan loved him. He had a good playoff series against the Denver Nuggets. And then he became an unrestricted free agent and signed with the Portland Trailblazers, and there's nothing the Utah Jazz could do. And in this case with Elijah, like, okay, maybe he's not ever going to be as good as Wes, but they want to at least have the opportunity to have him for a little while and make that decision for themselves. He may not even make it to next year's training camp. He could get cut over the summer as soon as free agency starts. We don't know, but at least Utah has the security of keeping him. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's security on his side. It's not reciprocated because Utah, they made a waiver claim for Jordan Hamilton, gave him guaranteed money, and he's gone. They did the same thing with D-League call-up Patrick Christopher, where they signed him to a multi-year contract, and then he's gone. And even with Tre Murray, our favorite guy who used to play with the Knicks, he was given guaranteed money, he was waived, and he's gone. And the Jazz also did that with Carrick Felix, but he wasn't a free agent signing, he was traded for. But like the evidence is there that Utah will take guys, will give them a shot, or at least evaluate them and make a decision. But they're doing it on their terms. So that's, I guess, the Utah Jazz news for this situation is that Elijah Millsap is here for as long as he deserves to be.
He's very hands-on, too, with his defense. I like it. It's good to see a Utah Jazz guard play defense. It's really nice to see.
It's like Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster. You know, it's so rare.
They're rare occurrences, but when you see it, you got to admit you'll never forget about it.
Right.
And Elijah Millsap is all right now. A lot of people were asking me about this, so I figured I'd ask you, what are the odds that Enes Kanter gets moved before the deadline?
Yeah, this is actually the hot button topic I've really been avoiding because I like the idea that it's hard to find young guys who are actually good enough to play. They may not necessarily be all-stars, but if you're building for tomorrow, it's kind of hard to figure out when you have to cut the cord. And I guess this is it, that Enes Kanter is going into his fifth year next year. This offseason, he's going to be a restricted free agent. If the Jazz want to get anything from him, they may, like, the guaranteed way is to move him before the deadline, either for more picks or for a veteran or something. Now, you asked me a very simple question. I'm giving you a complicated answer. But my idea is that it's actually a lot closer than people think. It's probably about 35 to 40% chance he is moved by the deadline at this stage. His defense has not come around. You know, he's been putting up good enough numbers that a lot of other teams are going to take a look at. And probably the best thing is, even though he's been mismanaged, you know, if he's supposed to be a three-point shooter, why is he finally taking threes for the first time in his fourth year? The things that other teams will look at is the fact that, hey, he is still only 22 years old. And, you know, back in the olden days, kids were coming into the draft when they were 23. So effectively, he is an attractive prospect, even with his warts and all. I would like the Jazz to keep him, but, you know, if he continues to play well enough but not improve, and I think that's what we're seeing, then the Jazz may feel like he's not in their long-term plans. I don't know. Like, in free agency, bigs always get overpaid, you know. And in this case, Utah has to be earmarking some money for Rudy Gobert. And while I love him, I don't know if he's going to be back on the free market, so they may have to move him.
Yeah, but what can they get for him? Because he is a restricted free agent. What do you think that they can actually get for him?
Well, if they wait till free agency, then they'll have to do a sign and trade. But right now, with his market value being what it is, they may be able, like, he could easily do well in Miami. I don't know if Miami is going to win it all this year, but Utah has the cap space to take on a guy like Udonis Haslam or somebody like that. If you wanted to do a one-for-one, maybe throw in some garbage picks or some end-of-bench guys either way. Like, if Utah wanted to get better now, I don't know if that's exactly what they want, then they could easily make it work by trading him to a team that wants a young guy who can bang but fit him in within an established system. In Utah, he's kind of with a bunch of other young guys who can also do the same thing. So it's not necessarily in his best interest. But like, what playoff team is going to take a chance on him? That's kind of like what Cleveland is doing right now with Kevin Love, our favorite guy. We have to mention him every single time we talk, it seems like. But he could leave if he wants. And I think with the way that his history is with the Utah Jazz, they either have to go pretty far to sell him on their program, and it's kind of hard to do that when he's fighting against Rudy Gobert for playing time and Trevor Booker and Jeremy Evans and Steve Novak. So it could be up to him deciding that, hey, we need to get something to work out sooner rather than later. If Utah is looking to get better right now, they can by getting a veteran, but I think that their idea is to get better and attack the playoffs in, you know, next year, next 2 years. They may end up getting more picks for it. And I actually don't know how that would work because right now there is the poison pill provision. And because he's an RFA, I don't know how much his cap space or his future contract would be worth in a trade right now. So that's something for the cap gurus to figure out, not for me.
Well, he's not going to get a max deal. Tristan Thompson probably will. But I don't think Enes Kanter will, he's very promising.
He'll probably still get at least $10 million, at the least. And that's just because he's a very young big man who can put up 20 points.
And rebound and play defense and do little things that he doesn't do for Utah, but we know that he can.
Right. You know, shoot three-pointers.
That's a big thing now, big men shooting three-pointers.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know.
Like, it would be fun if he could stay. I think the Jazz may need to figure out what they want to do. They have to save money for Dante Exum and Trey Burke, or who knows what's happening with him. But, you know, thankfully, I'm not the GM.
And me either. Thank God. We can just sit back and critique him. It's better that way. Amar, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure.
That was Amar, and you can catch him over at slcdunk.com. And don't forget, they have games this week against the LA Clippers tonight, and on Friday they have Golden State at home. It should be a lot of fun. And next Tuesday, Portland on the road. And we'll be right back. You're listening to the Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The West Coast All-Stars of the National Basketball Association have been voted for and selected, and there's a whole bunch more to be talked about. And joining me to do just that, from GrizzlyBearBlues.com, and another big reason why this show was nominated for Podcast of the Year, please welcome Joe Mullinax to the show. Joe, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
That was a wonderful introduction, Phil. I appreciate that. You know, it's nice to feel like I could possibly be a part of, a small part, but a part still, of the Podcast of the Year. I feel honored. I think I owe you a great deal of gratitude, sir. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
My pleasure. That's right. We're going to be the Podcast of the Year, and that's all that matters.
There
we still
go.
Have a couple more days to nominate me. The nomination process, I've been blowing that horn all week, but still, it's a great show because of the guests, and I've always said that. I've always maintained that, and I just play quarterback, and I think we do a good job, all of us. But this NBA All-Star team, here's who we have as the starters for the Western Conference. Steph Curry and Kobe Bryant in the backcourt, Marc Gasol, Anthony Davis, and Blake Griffin. Now, this is all done on Sunday. You know, we're just talking about this as a topic, but these were the five that were selected. Now, Kobe Bryant's probably not going to be there. Do you agree with the starting five?
Yes, I do, outside of Kobe Bryant. And like you said, unfortunately for Kobe, that probably will take care of itself. I would bet that Kobe will still go to the game, but he won't play for sure because of his torn rotator cuff. You would think that he's done for the season, especially the Lakers don't necessarily have anything to play for. So I would think that that spot will be filled by either Klay Thompson or James Harden, two guys who aren't on the team yet but are almost assuredly going to be reserves. Steph Curry is having an MVP caliber season. Anthony Davis is as well. He's just playing for a team that's still struggling to get over the hump in the tough Western Conference in the New Orleans Pelicans. So I think Davis deserves to be there. You could argue he is one of the top players in the NBA at this point. Blake Griffin, popularity wise, he'll always hang around. And then also he's having a good season. The Clippers are still hanging around in the West. And then Marc Gasol, as a Memphis Grizzlies blogger, podcaster, all of the above, it's wonderful to see how the Grizzlies as an organization have grown to the point where it's not just in Memphis that people are appreciating what Marc Gasol is. And at this point, to me, he's the best center in the NBA, period. So it really is great to see that, you know, Marc Gasol beat Blake Griffin out in voting. He was the second leader behind Anthony Davis in that front court selection process. So Marc Gasol being there, you know, that's a source of pride for the Memphis Grizzlies fan base, and it's really great to see him being acknowledged for what he is, one of the top players in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm with you on Marc Gasol. I'm with you on Kobe Bryant. I wouldn't have put Kobe Bryant in there. I did not vote for him.
No, I wouldn't have put him in there either. I think I would have gone with James Harden. He's having a remarkable season. But Kobe, again, part of this process is it's fan voting. You want the fans involved, or at least the NBA does. And Kobe Bryant's a name. I mean, you know, Carmelo Anthony for the Eastern Conference. You could argue he shouldn't be on that All-Star team, but he's a name. And that's just how it's going to be when it comes to the starters. Hopefully the reserves make up for it a little bit, those being selected by the coaches.
I'm going to argue the thing in a little while. Actually, next segment with Chris Willis, we're going to talk about the East Coast All-Stars. And you know what, though? I don't think that he should be there. I'm glad that Marc Gasol's there. As you know, I have my 1-1A teams in the West that would be the Portland Trail Blazers and Memphis Grizzlies, as you've known for a long time. I'm very happy that Gasol's there. I would not have selected Blake Griffin. even though he dumped or jumped over a Kia a couple years ago and he can dunk like the daylights, I would have put LaMarcus Aldridge in there instead of him. I think LaMarcus had a better year. I think Boogie Cousins has had a better year than Mr. Griffin. And I think Tim Duncan has had a better year than Mr. Griffin. But it is what it is, and the fans do have a say in this thing. You know, last year I did this show, and I mocked the process. This year I'm serious about it, and I wouldn't have selected him, but I can see why they did. And I don't have a problem with that. Who else? Who do you think got snubbed, though? I've named a few guys I think got snubbed. Who else? Who do you think got snubbed by the fans?
Well, the guys that you just named are pretty good ones. Obviously, LaMarcus Aldridge, part of his issue, and it'll be interesting to see if it affects the voting for the reserves. People thought he was going to be out for almost 2 months just a few days ago, and now he's back, and he looked phenomenal against the Wizards in a big game in D.C. the other night. So it really is interesting to see how the LaMarcus Aldridge situation will play out. I think Tim Duncan's a guy that you'll see on that team for sure. I think Boogie Cousins certainly deserves an appearance. He, especially at the beginning of the season, was lights out, dominant in the Western Conference. I think you'll see Chris Paul on that roster. I'm not sure you can argue he was snubbed, but I think he'll be there. And then also you got to remember, you know, the reigning MVP, Kevin Durant. Obviously injury pushed him aside a little bit, but you can always argue for Durant. I mean, the injuries that Durant dealt with, you know, Carmelo Anthony has sat out multiple games too in the East. So the fact that Kevin Durant was not elected to the All-Star roster starters is surprising. But I think he'll be on the team for sure, Kevin Durant, as an All-Star. But the fact he isn't starting to me was a bit surprising.
That didn't surprise me at all. I don't think he's as popular as these other guys. I don't think he's had as good a year as these other guys. I think the injury had something to do with it. But still, I don't know what the deal is. Maybe the fans just don't take to him because he's just not thuggish enough. Maybe he needs to go out there and commit a crime to get some street cred. I don't know. But you know some names that I think got snubbed? Damian Lillard is another one I think got snubbed. I think he's had a phenomenal year. You mentioned James Harden. I think you're right. What about Chris Paul? Do you think he got snubbed?
As a starter, I mean, and again, you look at just comparing it to the East. Obviously, two point guards will be starting in the East, Kyle Lowry and John Wall. I think that you could argue that a point guard like a Lillard or a Paul got snubbed a little bit. Kobe Bryant getting those votes probably takes up some space for them. Klay Thompson is another one who you could probably make an argument for. And obviously that's really fresh in a lot of people's minds because of the amazing quarter that he had recently where he just scored 37 points in a quarter. He was just red hot, could not be stopped. There's a lot of names that you could, you know, they're kind of floating in the starter argument. I think the only really solid ones that you kind of knew were going to be starters would be the guys like Anthony Davis, who's popular, and you watch him play and he's, you know, head and shoulders above a lot of the folks that he plays because of his athleticism and his position. And then Steph Curry. Steph Curry is really having a remarkable year. But outside of that, you know, I personally am a little bit biased towards Marc Gasol, but you could possibly use the same argument, you know, you did it for Blake Griffin, for Marc Gasol. You know, could a LaMarcus Aldridge have filled in that spot? Possibly. I don't think so, but you can make the argument. So there's just so many players, you know, maybe below Steph Curry and below the Anthony Davis type of athleticism and explosiveness that could maybe be interchangeable on that Western Conference All-Star team. And I think that just kind of speaks to the difference in talent between the West and the East. You look at the possible Eastern Conference folks that'll be reserved compared to the West, and I just don't necessarily think it's a contest personally. So it really is a testament to how deep the Western Conference truly is.
I agree with you. I think the East are going to put up a bigger battle than you think, though. But they have great players. They just have lousy teams. But, man, this is a crazy thing. What about Russell Westbrook? He got snubbed, I think, a little bit, too. The fans just don't show the Thunder players any love, do they?
Not really. No, they don't. And it has to do with that small market kind of philosophy. But I also think in those two particular cases, the injuries affected them. I really do believe that. I can't imagine Kevin Durant not being a starter on the Western Conference All-Stars if he had been healthy the entire season. And Russell Westbrook maybe a little bit less, but he's another tremendous talent. Those are two guys that, you know, I would think Durant will be on there before Westbrook. This might be a year where Russell Westbrook doesn't make the Western Conference All-Star team. And that would, you know, people will be outraged about that because when he's healthy, Russell Westbrook, you could argue, is the best point guard in the Western Conference right there alongside Steph Curry. So the Thunder will have at least one, you would think possibly two All-Stars on that reserve grouping. But you also, you have to keep in mind, there's only so many spots. And like you said, Tim Duncan will likely get a slot. He's had a good season and representing the Spurs. It's just going to be challenging for those coaches. Somebody's going to get snubbed. And it's probably going to be, you know, the guys that are kind of like a Mike Conley who have had all-star caliber years. But, you know, you just got too many other talented guards and wings in the West to make room for those kinds of guys. It's gonna be an interesting selection process.
Yes, it will. And you know what? When they do all that, we'll be back to talk about it. Joe, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely happy to be on, as always.
That was Joe Mullinax. You can find him at grizzlybearblues.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. Baseball lost an incredible, incredible athlete and a face of Major League Baseball when Ernie Banks passed away at the age of 83 of a heart attack. And here to join me to talk all about Mr. Cub and what he meant to baseball and the Cubs, please welcome Rush Olson to the show. Rush, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I am well. Thank you for having me, Phil.
Thank you for being here. You know, he used to say a line, "It's a great day for baseball, let's play too." But I'm thinking it's a sad day for baseball because we have to say goodbye to you. And it's going to be tough to say goodbye to Ernie Banks.
I don't think you ever read or encounter anybody that doesn't think Ernie Banks was just a tremendous person and made incredible contributions to the game. He was the statement you just made just summed up to me one of the things that I loved about Ernie Banks, which was the guy just embraced baseball. He just thought the game was the greatest thing ever, and he wanted to play all the time. And he played a long career, a successful career, a Hall of Fame career, and he his "Let's Play Two" was a signature phrase for him and for baseball. I used it in a video once for the Rangers just because it was such a great piece of baseball history.
It absolutely is. You know, I had the privilege of meeting him many years ago in Las Vegas. I played in a pro-am with him, and he was fantastic. And he still kept in touch. I sent him a Facebook friend request.
Yes.
And he remembered me. He was such a nice man and a big fan of the show. You know, a big fan of the show. He was a fantastic human being, dude, and one of the nicest people out there. But one thing that I just came away with was how in awe other baseball players were of him, like Pete Rose, for example, and others. The way they looked at him, the way they listened when he spoke. You know, you're talking about a legend of the game, and it's just amazing. And the way he carried himself, you could tell that he didn't think he was that big a deal. But he knew that you thought he was, and he was always going to be that way for you, and it was just fantastic. But one of the disappointments when we talk about his career was that he played more games, more regular season games without a postseason appearance, but you couldn't tell by that smile on his face because it never left his face.
No, he loved to play, and he deserved better. He deserved to be to have that postseason experience and to have that even greater joy of holding a trophy. In fact, one of the sad things about the timing of his passing is that the Cubs have just positioned themselves for the best time, their best position in you know, since, let's say, 1945, to be that team that is going to win one eventually. I mean, they've, you know, some of the moves they've made, their team looks great, and it looks great for the future. And you're sad that if they do end up winning one, that Ernie Banks wouldn't get to ride in the parade, because he'd be good on a parade. He'd be really good.
Oh yeah. You ain't kidding there. And you know what else, what I'm going to miss, but then I guess we won't miss it anymore because WGN's not going to show the games, is they would show Mr. Cobb when he was there. And,
sure.
And all he had to do was stand up and wave, and the place went nuts. And that's a guy who played on some really bad teams, but he was fantastic. Back-to-back MVPs.
Well, you know, he was from Dallas, which that's the area that I'm from. I'm from Fort Worth. And he grew up here. He played here. And I never got to meet Ernie Banks, but I did get to meet the guy that turned him on to pro baseball, which was William Blair. And William Blair was a former Negro Leagues pitcher. And he spotted Ernie Banks playing high school softball. His high school didn't even have a baseball team. He was playing softball and recognized Ernie Banks' talent and was able to get him he started playing in the Negro Leagues with the Kansas City Monarchs. And then eventually the Cubs picked him up from the Monarchs. But it was fascinating to listen to William Blair, who also unfortunately recently passed away, tell the story of how he found Ernie Banks. And we did an interview with him once where he talked about that. And there was a collection of Negro Leagues museum memorabilia that had come to on a tour to Texas for the Rangers. And we got him to walk through and talk about that. And William Blair was a fascinating character in himself, but his claim to fame was that he was probably the guy that discovered Ernie Banks.
Great discovery. Great discovery. Yes. Listen to this. 67.5 wins above replacement in his career. That's nuts. Look at this. In 1959, when he won the National League MVP, 10.2 runs of wins above replacement. 9.4 in the year he won the MVP in 58. This guy was something, man. What a baseball player. Now, you guys, you out there, you think that these guys get overpaid. He got $2,000 for his first season. In his last season, he got $60,000. So he made overall in 19 years, $680,500. That's how much a minor leaguer signs for his signing bonus. Incredible.
Yeah, he did it in an era where it wasn't guaranteed that you were going to do well, but he was the kind of guy where if you say he would have, you need to play for free, it sounds like he might have done it because he just thought the game was the be-all and end-all.
Sure, he would have been the same way if he were a milkman or a salesman or the mayor or whatever. Technically, he's the mayor of Chicago.
Right. I noticed that the mayor of Chicago moved the statue that had been in front of Wrigley Field until this most recent construction, moved it to City Hall so that it can be displayed there and in front of City Hall and people can come and see it.
That's a great thing, too, because no one wants to go down to Wrigley. They're all following me with the WGN ban. But I think this was fantastic.
Well, what a life. Because it's under construction. But
what's that?
I not to discount your influence, Phil, but the main reason that the statue isn't there is because they're doing renovations on Wrigley Field. Now, of course, a lot of it, you know, probably is you, of course.
Well, yeah, you know what? But I understood all the renovations, but we're working hard on this WGN thing, though. We're not letting this slide. But Ernie Banks was fantastic. What an athlete. My goodness. When you think about his influence, and it just didn't cover the baseball world. He had influence everywhere. He was one of those charismatic personalities who you could trust and who you could respect. And he did a lot of things off the field as well. I mean, this was a fantastic human being.
Sure. And, you know, he maintained a long career. He moved to first base. He originally had been a shortstop and a good one. And then he moved to first base after some injuries, and then he continued to hit. I mean, I was looking up a little bit of the 1969 Cubs, which are probably the most heartbreaking, you know, one of the most heartbreaking Cubs teams ever, and that's saying something. But Ernie Banks, at the age of 38, he still drove in 106 runs. He hit 23 home runs, played 155 games, and contributed to that team that had Billy Williams and Ron Santo and Glenn Beckert and Milt Pappas and a host of excellent players that just didn't quite break through.
Yep, that was the year the Miracle Mets came through.
Indeed.
It broke the Cubs fans' hearts. I'm a Mets fan because of that season, though, by the way. But cause I was four then, so.
Well, and I you know, it's funny because I obviously having my father grew up in Chicago, Cubs fan, I've, you know, obviously had some allegiance to the Cubs. But it's also, I remember when I first learned about that season, it was from a Mets point of view, because there are books written and stuff like that. And it's hard to not be a fan of the Mets that year as well.
Yeah, but the Cubs, they had a really good team. You know, that was, the Cubs were the Mets' real rival. It's not the Philadelphia Phillies, for example. Nobody cares about them until like 1977. So what's the difference about them? But Ernie Banks was a big reason why. And Met fans hated the Cubs, but they didn't hate him.
No, it would be hard to hate, for anybody to hate Ernie Banks.
Damn near impossible. 512 home runs, 1,636 RBIs. He had 90 triples. He had 407 doubles, 2,583 hits all told in 9,421 appearances. He was incredible, man. There was nobody like Ernie Banks, and it's going to be tough. But you know what? Life goes on, but we still have the great memories of anyone who ever saw him or met him, and he will live on forever. Rush, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure, Phil. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. That was Rush Olson. You can find him over at rusholson.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return after these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a very special offer. FanDuel will give you a 100% signing bonus of up to $200 with your first-time initial deposit. To receive this bonus, simply sign up at FanDuel using the promo code PhillyFlash and go win some cash with a flash at FanDuel.com.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epix Radio. Listen online, www.epixradio.com.
If you're looking for a great Portland Trail Blazers talk radio show, then look no further than the Blazers Edge podcast with Dave Deckard and Phil Nasons. For weekly hard-hitting commentary about your Trailblazers and fun NBA talk as well, please try the Blazers Edge podcast at blazersedge.com.
Maximum Sports Channels is more than just a radio station. Phil's Fantasy Sports Blog, The Writer's Garret, up-to-the-minute news feeds, great sports and entertainment commentary, Maximum Sports TV, including professional powerboat racing, and of course, the hottest music on the planet. Maximum Sports Channels. We're more than just a radio station.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Hi, we're Rob Folkett, and you're listening to Phil Nason's Show.
Tells me lies. Oh yeah.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. We're talking NBA All-Stars. We've already heard from Joe Mullinax and talked about the Western Conference. It's now time for the East. And joining me to talk about the Eastern Conference All-Stars, snubs, and who we think should be representing the Eastern Conference from PeachtreeHoops.com, Chris Willis is in the house. Chris, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing good, Phil. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. It's wonderful. We're doing this on Monday after our regular Hawks segment that turned out pretty good, I thought. Talking about the Hawks is easy, but talking about this Eastern Conference team is not. And I'll tell you why. You've got his guards. John Wall and Kyle Lowry were elected to start by the fans. And then the forwards. You've got Carmelo Anthony, Paul Gasol, and LeBron James. Now, let's look at the guards. John Wall and Kyle Lowry have both had fantastic seasons, but I think there's probably others that could have taken their role.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Butler's had a phenomenal year, I think. He struggled a little bit of late as Chicago struggled a little bit, but I think he's a sure-in all-star. And I think you can't dismiss what Jeff Teague has done in Atlanta. I think he's deserving of an all-star spot given where the Hawks are in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I have those two. In fact, I voted for Jeff Teague and Jimmy Butler. I didn't vote for John Wall, and I didn't vote for Kyle Lowry. I also think Kyrie Irving should get a little say-so in this matter. I think he should have gotten more votes probably. Dwayne Wade is another one I thought. I don't know if he should have been a starter, but I'd like to see him on the team. He's like the second, number two in efficiency among all shooting guards in the NBA today, at least. And I like that. I like Butler, too. I really like Butler. But I guess you can't really kick against Wall and Lowry starting. But I guess the question is, do you think they should stick to roles? Because now you've got two point guards starting for the East. Should they have named a shooting guard, maybe?
It's tough. I've gone back and forth about the fan voting and that format and how it needs to be. Typically you would like to have a shooting guard there. It's tough. I don't know. You know, I don't know if you need to put that distinction there. That would definitely swap up, how the results are tallied. And a lot of teams now are using more of a two-point guard attack at times, too. So, you know, it's tough. I don't think any system is going to be perfect. I would have liked to have seen – I think Jimmy Butler, from what I've seen in the first half, you know, he's definitely deserving of that All-Star nod. And, you know, like you said, you can't dismiss what Dwayne Wade's been able to do. It's been a remarkable efficient season, although Miami struggled a little bit.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Kyle Korver named.
Yeah, that's a good point. Right now I've got three Hawks on the team. That's up from one, I think, from the last time me and you talked about it. But that's because the Hawks are up seven games in the Eastern Conference. You know, I never saw that happening. So, I mean, I think they're deserving of three. Right now I've got Kyle Korver on the outside looking in, but with Mike Budenholzer coaching the team, I would think that he would be one of the first players possibly up if there was a need for an injury replacement. So, but right now I've got Teague, Millsap, and Horford on the team. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think Millsap belongs there. I have Al Horford, too, on my backup list. But the forwards, Carmelo Anthony, Paul Gasol, and LeBron James. Now, I can't argue with the Paul Gasol selection. He's been a beast for Chicago. I can't argue with that one, really.
No, I agree with you. I like Paul Gasol. I've been a fan of his for a long time and was really, really hoping and got hopeful, got my hopes up during the summer there. There was a brief period there where, you know, the Hawks were supposedly talking to him. I thought he would have been a real good addition there in Atlanta. But, he's had a remarkable year. LeBron James is LeBron James. He's not had his typical MVP type of season, but you know he's probably the greatest player on the planet right now. Carmelo, you know I've got all the respect in the world for Carmelo. It's tough when you look and you see the Knicks struggling the way they are, you know, they get a, they're going to get an all-star and probably get a starter if he's, his knee allows him to play. So, but, you know, I think there's also mention for Chris Bosh. I mean, you look at his numbers, he's bounced back soundly with James' departure in Miami. You know, I think he's averaging over 20 points a game. He's missed a lot of games, though. But I think both he and Wade deserve mention there for the Heat.
Oh, I agree with you, too. The other one that I would probably put in there in Gasol's place would be Paul Millsap. Millsap's also had a pretty good year. Carmelo Anthony does not deserve to be an all-star. He hasn't played like one. He doesn't act like one. He's just – it's a fan vote. And I'm not going to argue with the fans. Okay, he's a great scorer, but he does more talking than shooting nowadays. And I think this will be his last game of the season, the All-Star game. It's in New York. It's a cha-ching moment for him, which is he's all about the cha-ching. He's not about winning. That's obvious. And, well, it is what it is. But I did not vote for him, and I'm a Knicks fan. The only vote I would give Carmelo Anthony is a vote out of New York because he is horrid for that team. I would have rather seen Tobias Harris in there or even Luol Deng. Luol Deng's had a much better season this year. I think he's finally recovering from that spinal tap.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I think there's definitely some sentiment there that Anthony's getting in on his career work more so than what his season numbers are. I'll give you another name, the guy in Orlando, Nikola Vucevic. You know, he's nearly averaging 20 and 10. Which is not something that occurs a lot nowadays. You know, if the Magic had just a few more wins, you know, there's a good chance that he could have snuck his name into the discussion a little bit.
Oh, I have him on my list too. In fact, I have a man crush on him. I shouldn't say that out loud, but he's fantastic. He's a fantasy basketball dream come true. Philadelphia is still kicking themselves for letting him go. But it is what it is. And I've got Al Horford there. I've also got some votes for Kevin Love. Kevin Love is starting to find his groove. David Blatt's starting to give him the ball or get him in situations where he's most effective, and that's around by the top of the key at the three-point arc. And he's starting to hit there, and he rebounds well, too. He doesn't play defense. And the All-Star game is where I really like watching Kevin Love play because I don't expect him to play defense. And there, Kevin Love fits my plan of a basketball player at an exhibition game. But in a real game, no thank you. He wouldn't make my top 50. I need a defensive player. I take Paul Millsap over Kevin Love any day of the week and twice on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Cleveland struggled a lot early on, but they're starting to get it together now, and Love's starting to play well, and LeBron looks like MVP level LeBron again. So, you know, they're going to be heard from in the second half. That's for sure. We'll be interesting to see if Love can ride this hot streak though to the All-Star game, because it seems like he had a lot of ground to try to make up, you know, early on.
Well, I agree. But one thing that just about everybody agrees on is the coach. Mike Budenholzer is the coach of the Eastern Conference, and he deserves it, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's a coach in basketball that's done as good a job as Mike Budenholzer. Of course, I'm a little bit biased knowing that I watch the team daily, but Steve Kerr's done a phenomenal job in Golden State. But I think everybody knew that team was going to be good. You know, the Hawks, people thought they'd be a playoff team. They didn't think they were a team that could possibly capture the number one seed. And right now they're running away with the Eastern Conference, seven games up on the Wizards. So I think it's a testament to his hard work and the way he's got his team to buy in. So I'm really excited to see him go to New York.
Especially after all the controversy from the summer. You know, they had to live down a lot of stuff over
there.
Yeah,
and I mean, that's true. They put the focus on the court. You know, that's the only thing they could really control. And he's done a great job of taking an unfortunate situation and circling the wagon, so to speak, and you know, it's been an unbelievable run in Atlanta, one that we've probably never seen anything like. So,
and that's a fantastic thing, man. They're going to move the Braves out of the number one spot in the fans' hearts in Atlanta. That's for sure. They're playing great basketball. The All-Star game is going to be a blast. We'll talk more about that after the reserves are mentioned. Chris, great stuff today. Thank you so much for being on the show. We'll see you next week for your regular Atlanta Hawks report.
Always a pleasure, Phil. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you, Chris. That was Chris Willis. You can catch him over at PeachTreeHoops.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. We're wrapping up an amazing day of basketball talk. And joining me now to talk a little EuroLeague, please welcome Emmett Ryan from BallinEurope.com. Emmett, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, Phil. Great to be back on again, talking some EuroLeague ball.
Absolutely. Now, what happened with the Irish Cup?
Well, we had two blowouts, but they're still kind of interesting games. Like, UC Demons, who now look like they could go for a perfect season in all competitions. They beat UCD Marion pretty convincingly, 91-65. In the women's final, we closed the half, but second half at Montanati Hotel, Glenmeyer absolutely walked away with it. Really great team performance. Grainne Dwyer, who's on the Irish 3x3 team, had a big game for them. So, yeah, two fantastic finals.
And that's great to hear. I'm glad that that worked out. Now, we've got some big games here in EuroLeague this week. Panathinaikos 2-2 against Galatasaray 2-2. Big night. Big night on the 29th for the boys from the, or I'm sorry, they're playing on the 30th. I had it wrong. Big night for Panathinaikos.
Absolutely. And in many respects, Panathinaikos are going to this game in a situation which where they expect it to be a team with the worst record. Most people expected Galatasaray to go into this game, having had the home date with Alba Berlin last week on 3-1 and with a bit of room for maneuver against Panathinaikos. They don't have that now. They fell to Alba last week. That was an upset. Not a huge upset, but a big enough one to catch most people off guard, given Gala were at home. So now they're going to go to Athens to take on your favorite team, obviously, also one of the toughest teams to beat in their own barn. All logic and reason really here, Phil, dictates that Panathinaikos win this because they know if they win their home games, they're going to make it to the playoffs. And I just don't really see, like Galatasaray, I just don't see what's going on with them. They have a great coach, there's no question there, in Ergin Ataman, but they just don't seem like a team that's capable of making that push. So right now, Panathinaikos, who for a few people were seen as, you know, they'd have to work to get into that fourth spot, right now it looks like they might get a much smoother ride than was expected.
Well, I think so too, and I'm pretty happy about that. But the big game over in Group B, though, is Maccabi and Real Madrid. Real Madrid is surprisingly, to me, 4-0.
That is surprising as well, because they have been horribly inconsistent, especially against the stronger teams in EuroLeague, but also back domestically in Spain. They haven't exactly been firing on all cylinders. And Maccabi, of course, at home in this game. A couple of weeks ago, we saw Maccabi beat Barcelona. They gave up a big lead, but eventually pulled it out to record their first win over Barcelona in something like 5 years, I think, which is quite a long time for Maccabi to go without a win over a team they face that often. So now they've got Real Madrid, another team who would normally say, well, we expect a W, even though it's in Tel Aviv. But Maccabi, of course, beat Real Madrid in the EuroLeague final last year in the championship game. And now they've got the home date with Real. They pushed them close in this round last year at this stage. I really am leaning towards Maccabi to pull the upset here and go to 4-1, which for them would be a fantastic start to Group E.
I think Maccabi's going to win that one, too. I don't believe in Real Madrid. I know a lot of people do, but I don't. The other game that's going to – there's so many interesting games here this week. Belgrade takes on Alba Berlin.
Belgrade is in a situation no one expected at all. 0-4 after four games. Like, if you tell me 1-3, I said maybe, but like 0-4, was not on the radar at all. They're unbeaten still in the Adriatic League. That's their domestic league, which is a pretty strong league. But now they're going to take on Berlin, a Berlin team which has got, all of a sudden, its hopes of the playoffs reignited after that win over Galatasaray. If they can go to Belgrade and pull the upset, that would be extraordinary. But there's one player NBA fans should watch out for on the Zvezda team. And that's Bojan Marjanovic, who was a 7'4" phenom, absolutely about 24, 25 years of age, and crucially has been on NBA radar before. He turned down minimum contracts because he can get paid more in Europe. But the way he's playing this year, you're thinking he's either going to get an extraordinary for Europe next summer, or someone's going to come in for more than the minimum for him. Because even though he's 7'4", he's reasonably mobile, like, you know, as mobile as someone 7'4" can get, but, like, you know, more than you would expect is the best way to describe it. So he'd be a great player to watch in that game.
Yeah, I agree. That should be fun to see, and that's going to be on the 29th. You can catch that at about, I guess it's 1 o'clock Eastern, right?
Yeah, about a quarter to 1 Eastern, just doing the rough math. So, 9 minus 6. Close to 3 o'clock Eastern, actually. That's a reasonable hour for you guys.
It's a reasonable hour. We're still working, though, but it's still a reasonable hour. Now, Barcelona takes on Zalgiris. That's going to be fun to see, too. I need to see Barcelona lose, though.
In many respects, I think a lot of people think that needs to happen. It's also interesting because Barca are 2-2. They're playing Zalgiris, who are a team who, well, they're 1-3, but they're one being an upset over Alba. And Barcelona is not exactly what anyone would have called at this point of the campaign. Normally, Barcelona walks the top scene. I think they've got 5 losses in 6 years. Part of this season over that stage. So it's normally the place where they take care of business. Zalgiris, like I said it before in previous shows, Phil, they somehow always make the top 16. No one really understands why, and they usually take a few poundings. So I don't really see this game being close at all.
Yeah, I don't either, but it's always wishful thinking, I suppose. Now, CSKA Moscow takes on Novgorod in Group F. Is that going to be a good one?
Yeah, Nizhny Novgorod have surprised quite a few people with the way they performed. Like, everybody thought they can get the odd win here and there, but a couple of their wins have been very impressive. Well, they've only got 2, but they've both been very impressive performances. They're going to CSKA 4-0. CSKA, you know, looking good, looking strong. And you would think CSKA will take the W, but, like, you got to see the way Nizhny Novgorod are playing. They have a chance of at least giving CSKA a scare. I still think CSKA got moved to 5-0 with the win. But definitely, this game is far more interesting now than if you'd asked 2 or 3 weeks ago how good it was going to be. And there's actually a condensed schedule as well this week, incidentally. So looking at that, you're thinking, CSKA, you know, they'll probably get the W, but it's not a lockdown. So it's the other game that really jumps out for me really here, and it's probably one of the players playing, and that's FS and Olympiakos. FS Pilsen, obviously a team who have quarterfinal ambitions, currently 2-2, like Nizhny Novgorod and Fenerbahce Ulker. There's 3 teams tied in that, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Olympiakos unbeaten, but if you're like to draw the list player down, you put down the best 12, from that, there's far more FS players than there are Olympiakos players. So you got to wonder, you know, is that going to play into it? Will FS finally show their talent? And the other, of course, big thing is that FS's coach, Duda Ivković, guided Olympiakos to a yearly title just a couple of years ago. So there's that little bit of, you know, rivalry and old blood there as well. So I think that could be a really fantastic game. That one's taking place on Friday. That's going to be at about 2:45 Eastern.
I'm going to watch that one because I want to see Olympiakos lose. I really do. What about Fenerbahce? It's
Fenerbahce. It's Thursday, not Friday. My apologies. Got 29 and 30s mixed up. Yeah, Fenerbahce, they have a game where it's a road one you expect them to win. Not something I've said very often in this stage. It's because of who they're playing. Unicaja Malaga, who so far have just failed to impress anyone. They're 0-4. Hadn't looked great in any of those 4 games, in all honesty. They just look like a team who's playing at the string at this stage. Fenerbahce go to Malaga knowing that they get the W here, Nizhny lose, maybe FS lose. They're looking in good stead to be, you know, at the sort of 1/3 pole, be in a good position to take a playoff spot. Like, it's still pretty crowded. You've got Vittoria and Milano both in 1-3. Not close out of it yet. But you're kind of looking at the battle for those 3 spots now. It's probably going to be those 2 spots. It's most likely going to be FS, Nizhny Novgorod, and Fenerbahce Ulka battling it out for those. At Vittoria, they have a very good chance of making it to the postseason.
Yeah, I think you're right. I what about Milan? The Milan-Vittoria game, now that's on Wednesday night too. Or I'm sorry, that's on Thursday night. That's going to be a good one too, right?
It is. And it's almost in a way an early elimination game, Phil, as well, because they're both minus 19 points. Say, Milan are minus 47 points differential. Vittoria minus 19. That will come into it, I would imagine, come the end of the season. But it's obviously wins and losses count the most. And they're both 1-3. They're both, in theory, only a game behind the playoffs. But whoever loses ground here, whoever goes to 1-4, has an awful long road back in the final 9 games of this campaign. Because you know that, like, one of Fenerbahce, Nizhny, and FS is likely to get a W, if not 2 of them, this week. And if that happens, it's going to be a much further back. 2-3, much more manageable at this stage.
Yeah, I think you're right. Great stuff today, Emmett. Thanks for being on the show.
Always a pleasure.
Okay, that was Emmett Ryan. You can catch him over at ballineurope.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's show. Until next time, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.